This is a system built on 70% of the work, at least, being done by people who are underpaid with no security, but who are still doing the same job you are. The colleges are looking at that, the college administrators look at that, and they know if we can get it cheaper, why wouldn't we go this route?
But yeah, the job itself, I love the work. I love the students I work with, my coworkers I love. What's frustrating though is not knowing if I'm going to be working again, if I'm going to be doing this for another 6 years, is this ever gonna turn full time? Depending on my contract, I may or may not have benefits.
And you're trying to support a family.
I am, yeah, and that's nothing I have to consider for my children. Is
how many?
I have three. They're all very young right now, so trying to put them in programs is sometimes difficult. Saving for their education. Sorry.
It's okay. I understand.
So, solidarity! So, solidarity!
Joining me on today on Living Radio is a young gentleman I've known for a long time. His name is Jerry Potter, director, producer of the film In Search of Professor Precarious. And Jerry loves alliteration and documentary films, clearly. This documentary is going to be premiering. That's right, people. It's the first time you can see it publicly screening in Edmonton on Friday, May 3rd at CoLab. If you don't know where that is, it's 9641 102nd A Avenue, kind of just adjacent to downtown, or maybe still downtown for you. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chris.
It's good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you reached out to me and wanted to talk about this film because, you know, we run into each other periodically at different events, usually cinema related, and we always kind of discuss what's going on, but also sometimes what you're up to. So I'm glad we get to talk about this film. You've described it, or maybe somebody else wrote this, I don't know, the struggle for equality of precarious faculty in universities and colleges. Now, I would have to say that I was like unaware of really that being a label or even just what that issue means. So, and it's something that you've experienced yourself throughout your career as well. So maybe let's just fill in the audience on the details of In Search of Professor Precarious.
Yeah, I taught for 27 years in different Alberta universities. And I was teaching theater-related subjects mostly. Eventually, during that period, I was also starting to make films. And around 2015 or 2016, I was involved in some collective bargaining for one of the universities I taught for on behalf of sessional lecturers. And I did a lot of research and discovered that actually some of the problems that the people at my university, which was the University of Lethbridge at that time, were kind of endemic. They were happening at Red Cross Canada, and later I found out right across the world. So what's happened in the past 40 or 50 years is that slowly there's become more and more people in colleges and universities who teach there, who are hired on a part-time and usually a temporary basis. So you get hired for a course or a couple of courses, and then maybe you get renewed, maybe you don't. But that's the situation for now the vast majority of people who are teaching in colleges and universities. It used to be we were a small minority. Over the past 40 years or so, we've become the majority, right? And all of the things that professors had won for themselves by forming associations and unions and getting things like benefits, getting pay that you could actually live on, getting pensions, getting research funding, getting basically running the committees that actually run the university in many cases. All of those things, none of them applied to the majority of people who are teaching now, who were hired on a part-time basis or a temporary basis. And the name Precarious comes from really a kind of a new analysis of what's going on in the neoliberal capitalist economy throughout the Western world, which is more and more people are being hired as part of what they call the gig economy. You're hired per unit of whatever labor you're doing. You're hired on a short-term basis. Usually that means you don't get the things that people fought for the last 150 years in the labor movement, like a 40-hour week, like benefits, like health benefits, like pension funds, like all of those things that people fought so hard to get, especially after the Second World War, are gone from the gig economy. People who are making money from it tend to say, hey, the gig economy is great. People can make money on the side. And some people are happy to do that. But a lot of the people that I was teaching alongside, they weren't doing it on the side. They were doing it as a full-time job. Sometimes they were teaching at two or three different places and running from one to the other. Some of them have been doing it for as much as 30 years, right? If, for instance, in the arts field, in the fine arts field, they were doing it as a way to actually make a little bit more of a living because, as you probably know, and your readers and listeners probably know, we artists don't make a lot of money, right? Usually, 99% of the artists don't make a lot of money. We're aware of the stars who make the millions, but that's 1%. The other 99% struggle to get by. So in the fine arts, a lot of the artists use it as a way to try to make a regular living to even out their income so that they can actually, maybe have a family. Some of them might want to buy houses, right? Although the truth is, if you're a sessional, the bank probably will not back your mortgage, right? So when I was bargaining for sessionals, I was realizing that we were getting paid maybe a third to a half what a permanent faculty would be getting to teach the same course. And often the sessionals were actually better qualified to teach those courses because they were working in the field at that time. On top of that, we had no job stability, right? You didn't know if you're going to get hired next term or not. It would depend on enrollment. It would depend on the whims of the chairs or the deans. And we had definitely had no benefits, no pension funds, no research money, nothing to help us advance. No path forward, lousy pay, no job stability, no future, really. But because we love the subjects that we're teaching, and we like teaching. Often we love our students. We like the teaching process. People keep doing it. But I stepped off the wheel in 2016 and went, okay, I'm going to use what I've got, my talent and my skills at this point. I can make films. I've made about eight or nine films at that point and make a film about the issues I'd been struggling with and researching. So I went across Canada. And I spent a few years doing that because I had to subsidize myself between trips by making more films and doing other things. It took me about 3.5, 4 years to put that film together. I ended up traveling across Canada several times. I went down to the US and interviewed people from Mexico and the US who were involved in this struggle because it's a big struggle, right? And a lot of people who are teaching colleges and universities are becoming really aware of it. It's kind of under the radar for students because you don't know if the person teaching you is really on a temporary contract or they're on the tenure track. And tenure is a way of getting job security for people and supposedly an extra iota of academic freedom for people who are teaching for a long term in colleges and universities. But there are fewer and fewer people are tenured or on the tenure track. And more over the years have become precarious faculty. And we use that word precarious because people are starting, economists and political scientists are starting to use that terminology for everybody who's basically on the gig economy. And that means anybody who's hired basically on the basis of one course or anything up to about 3 years, right? You're still on a temporary basis. You're not on that tenure track. There's no path forward. And what happens frequently too is people will teach at a college or university for 20, 30 years and get really good at it, right? Students, you get better at teaching the more experienced you are, and you know your subject better. And but those people are rarely considered when the rare tenure track jobs come up because they're already teaching there for cheap. So why would the employer hire them for more money to do the same thing they're already doing? Right. So it kind of backfires. It works against you to be a sessional faculty member, right? And that's what the film's about. But it's also about the people who are fighting to make things better. And there's some really amazing people in the film who are smart and capable and brave and are trying to make conditions better for everybody, really. And this is not a fight against the permanent faculty or the students or anybody else. It's just trying to get better living conditions for the people who are doing most of the teaching in colleges and universities right now. If you're stressed, you're not probably doing your best work. If you're running across town to another college or university to teach, you're probably not doing your best work. So how do we make things better? And that's one of the issues in the film. And I think, well, you have to watch the film to find out.
Well, and yeah, you can do that Friday, May 3rd at CoLab, downtown Edmonton. That's 9641 102nd A Avenue. So you kind of led us to that second thing that we want to examine here, is telling us about the actual people who are in the film that are, you know, subjects in the people's lives that you follow, like Jen, Pam, Sandra, and Marco. So tell us a little bit about them and their experience in being precarious professors.
Really interesting people. Pam is a dancer and choreographer. Her specialty is contact improv. And she'd been teaching when we interviewed her for about 23, 25 years. She became active with a group called Contract Faculty Forward that was trying to actually improve conditions for precarious faculty in colleges particularly, although she also taught in universities. She's just a live wire, and she's totally committed to making things better for people, to making a better world, essentially. But we also have some footage in the film of her doing some contact improv, which is really quite beautiful. So, and she gave up eventually. It was held against her to some degree that she was involved in trying to make things better. And so she retired about a year and a half ago. Marco is a really interesting person too. Marco taught in the English department where I was teaching at McEwen for quite a few years. And Marco's also a musician. We feature a little bit of his musical work in the film. He was a sessional and became part of a bargaining committee that was negotiating for a new contract at McEwen. And eventually he was actually kicked off the team, the negotiating team, by his own side, by the faculty association, because, well, he said it was because he was too strong in his support for sessional rights and the needs of the sessionals who are teaching there. They said he quit. It's not clear, and I don't take a stand on that one. But Marco then was corresponding with a lot of the sessionals that were teaching at McEwen, and there was a lot of them. They formed about 63 or 64% of the people actually teaching there. They formed their own caucus, their own group within their faculty association, and when they negotiated a rather poor contract for sessionals. Some people were going to lose money. The longest serving sessionals, the ones who had been there for like 15, 20, 25 years, they got a big pay cut because they flattened things. They brought things up, people up who were starting at the very beginning. They brought their pay up. But in order to compensate for that, they brought the people who had been there the longest, they brought their pay down. So a lot of people got mad about that contract, and they weren't happy with their own faculty association. And the faculty association did not allow sessionals to be in most of the positions that ran the faculty association there. And they also cut you off and said you weren't a member on the last day of your teaching contract, right? So that between contracts, you were not a member. So in the spring or summer, or even on the Christmas break, even if you've been teaching there for 30 years, suddenly you were not a member of the faculty association, and they did not have to represent you. So they had a little rebellion within that faculty association, and they managed to change the constitution. And it was a big battle, fought very hard. As a result of that, actually, the province changed legislation to say that sessionals could become members of their faculty associations or unions outside of their teaching contract and beyond it, well beyond it in many cases. So they also won representation on the council that ran the faculty association. So it was a big battle, and it was a very successful one. However, you know, Marco was not hired to teach the next term, and he thought it was because of his activism. Nobody could prove that, but that was the situation. So it's really I mean, and this is at a time when, you know, the president of the University of Alberta was making over $1 million in salary. The people who were actually doing the teaching on the front line were below the low income cutoff, right, for Edmonton. What we used to call the poverty line. They were below the poverty line, many of them. And I interviewed people during this period who got their food from the food bank and taught in universities. And none of them would go on camera and talk about it. They were ashamed of it, unfortunately. But those are two of the characters. There's some more. There's Jen, who's having kids and trying to support them and wrote a textbook. And she was working for her PhD, and she was worried that while she was teaching, and she was teaching a lot of courses, someone would come along who had a PhD and get the job that she'd been doing all these years on a permanent basis, if the job ever became permanent. So she was struggling with that issue, and she was she's a real high achiever. She was doing so much in her life that she's an interesting character. She's another really, really lively character. And she's written three books in that period of making the film. So she's and she's still teaching. So she's doing fine. Lots of interesting characters. Sandra, you'll have to meet. She's also a very interesting character and a wonderful person. And she was one of the ones who got the big pay cut at McEwen. She'd been teaching there for 23 years, and she got a $10,000 a year pay cut. So she was kind of fighting to make things better in her faculty association with Marco. Lots of interesting people in this film, and you'll get to know them, and you'll experience some of their struggles. You'll find out what it's really like, because a lot of people just don't know. It's kind of one of the descriptions we made of the film was lifting the curtain on higher education's dirty little secret. Most people don't know that this is what's going on in colleges and universities. Meanwhile, the government is underfunding all of these places. They're getting away with not putting enough, as much money as they used to into universities and colleges. And there are senior administrators who are getting really high levels of pay, for Fortune 500 levels of pay, but the people actually doing the teaching are getting exploited, basically. So that's what the film's about. But it's there's humor in the film. There is a lot of positive things going on in the film. It's not a difficult film to watch in any way. It just raises issues, I think, in an entertaining and engaging way.
Our guest today on Moving Radio is Jerry Potter. We are talking about the brand new documentary that he's got, In Search of Professor Precarious. You can catch it at CoLab on Friday, May 3rd. It's going to be the premiere screening in town, so it'll be an interesting event. I'm sure some of the people involved obviously are going to be there, and some people this really hits home for obviously are going to be there too. You know, Jerry, when you talk to me about this stuff, obviously it kind of relates to me in some ways, in that anyone that knows me knows that, you know, I'm a teacher, but at a high school level. And it's a funny thing, because sometimes, you know, people will look at the job that you do and these people in this film as being somehow more prestigious. So I feel like there's this air of like people like yourself and the people in the film are constantly kind of abused to be told like, oh, you're lucky to be here almost, right? Like, this is fortunate of you to be at a higher learning level, but at the same time, they never respect what you truly do and what you give to these people as they continue on to their careers. And I find like that's the crazy thing. So of course, this is bureaucracy at its finest, where like the government will give the university money, but then at the same time, they're like, you decide how this is distributed. And of course, the people at the top are going to take care of themselves and realize that we can save money by shortchanging the people at the bottom rungs. And what's disgusting about this is it's really just operating like a greedy corporate entity. And that's the thing I find insane. It's expensive to go to school, but yet the people that actually make the school run are not compensated and not supported, and not given an opportunity to create a career, or at least not enough of them. For me, at least, I look at this and I'm like, it's not shocking, but I always kind of knew that it was there. But it is a little disheartening to know that people are legitimately struggling in those positions and probably would trade places with me in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, like, for you, this is nothing enlightening. You're just trying to enlighten the audience, right? Is this something that the students are aware of? Is this something that goes beyond outside the walls of the universities and these colleges?
Very few students know about this. They don't know what's going on. Yeah, they just go to their classes, right, and try to learn and try to get good marks and try to graduate. But so it's kind of under the radar. In fact, a lot of sessionals are encouraged not to talk about their working situation with students. I was told that at one point. Yeah, you're not supposed to talk about that. And when if you do, if you care to talk about your working conditions while you're teaching, some students don't like it, right? They sort of go, boo-hoo, yeah, it's right. I'm here to learn. Don't talk to me about that stuff. It does affect what happens in the classroom, right? If you're stressing and underpaying and under-rewarding the people who are doing most of the teaching, it's going to change the atmosphere. It's going to mean that that person probably doesn't have as much time as they might to look at your work, to market, to meet with you outside. It means that they may not be around to write you a recommendation later when you want need that for a job or to go on to the next level of education. And it's not as prestigious too. I mean, I wrote lots of letters of recommendation for students to get into graduate programs, this sort of thing, over the years. But I would tell them, look, my letter of recommendation does not have the weight that a longtime professor, permanent professor would have. So get those first. I'm happy to write you something, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not going to make a lot of difference necessarily. But in many cases, those people are not around because if you're only hired for a few terms and you don't know if you're coming back or not, or you have to, I mean, lots of people who do this kind of work, they stop doing it after a while because they just can't live on it. And they go into other fields. One of the main characters in our film does that, right? And it, so they may not be around to write those letters. So what we do really affects what happens in the classroom, and it affects students. It actually impinges, even though the teachers are very, very good usually, and they're often younger than the permanent faculty. They're often more active in the fields in which they are teaching. Some of them are, a lot of them are pros who are actually doing the other work on the side or while they're teaching. So they're good teachers, but the conditions under which they're teaching are not good, right? So it does affect what happens in the classroom, and it does affect the education system. Basically, what we're saying is the quality of education is impacted. We're fighting for not only equality, we'd like to be paid the same as our permanent colleagues are for teaching the same things. And most of us do research on top of that, right? And a lot of us do service, whether it's community service or we sit on committees at the universities, right? So we want to get the same pay, but it's also about quality, not just equality, but quality of education. We're fighting for a better education system.
It's a pretty vicious cycle at this point now, and I don't know how things change because it's not like the government's going to change their mind and all of a sudden be like, you know what, we really need to overfund this or fund it appropriately. And then the
Well,
other side of that,
even if they did, would it get down to the people who
yeah.
have the least power in the system?
And the hypocrisy of they sell these institutions of higher learning as like the quality of it, yet they continue to like pump money into improving a building, but never do anything about the people that are actually working on the ground level.
That's pretty accurate, I'm afraid. And it's no one person's fault what's going on here. But I'm a little more optimistic than you are. I think when people work together, they can
Oh,
change things.
thank God, Jerry, because you're on the inside.
And we can change things if we work together on it. And we need the students to support this. We need permanent faculty to support it. We need the administrations to wake up and support it. We need the unions and faculty associations really fighting for sessionals hard. Some of them are doing better than others. University of Alberta has made some improvements over the years in what it does for sessionals and the way it bargains for them. But they need to fight a lot harder. All of them need to fight a lot harder, and they need to take sessional concerns seriously. Because they regard sessionals as coming and going, which is not really an accurate picture. A lot of the faculty associations do not really understand the needs and the problems of precarious faculty very well. And so they don't fight for them at the bargaining table, which is where a lot of change really happens, right? In the work world, that's where change happens. The reason that a starting out kindergarten teacher in Alberta makes way more than I ever made is because they have a strong union that's been fighting for them for years and years and years. And that's when we work together, we can make things better. And that's what we have to do.
Well, thank God you're positive, Jerry, because I just see this as being rife with issues. Look, this, you talked about this, this film, In Search of Professor Precarious, has been about 4 years of your life off and on while you do other things, right? You know, this is the shooting of it, conceiving of it is one thing, you know, but like anybody knows that has done this or listens to the shows that, you know, documentaries are massive puzzles that are completely jumbled up and very different from a narrative film where you might actually have a path set out before you. You know, you're constantly discovering what that path is every time you go see someone and you shoot and then you go back and look at it, right? So yeah, there's a lot of people involved in this, right? You need to edit it, you need to shoot it, you need to consider the score, the sound design, whatever, all those layers of it, right? Like, who do you want to talk about that helps you with this film that maybe is kind of like the special sauce for this that help make this come to fruition and makes it come to life?
Well, there are a whole lot of people who help make it come to life. You know, I was the driving force behind it, but, you know, I couldn't get any funding for it at the beginning. The arts councils were not interested in funding documentaries particularly, and they certainly weren't interested in this one. They labor under the illusion that professors are all well off, and it's hard to get people to see anything else. But after I've been working on it, sort of paid for by myself for a couple of years, some of the unions started getting interested in it, and they started chipping in. Now, they don't control what's in the film in any way, but they supported the film, and that was a huge benefit that those unions and faculty associations started coming in. There are other people involved in this too. My editor, Ray Harper, is somebody with way more experience than I have. And I hired people who had a lot more experience than I have to help me finish this film. And Ray encouraged me to keep going with this project. At times I was ready to quit because I couldn't get funding for it. There seemed to be a lot of opposition to it here and there. It was a challenge. And I wasn't making a lot of money myself personally to sort of finance it. So, but he came along and he said, you know, keep working on this. He helped me make a trailer on spec. He then started, you know, narrative sections of the film. We had, somebody had to film me, and I filmed myself in some cases, but maybe not the best footage all the time. So he filmed several of the narrative sequences that kind of provide the links between the various sections of the film. So lots of people like Ray helped me out. Ray has, you know, been working. He's probably done 200 or 300 films that he's edited or produced himself. We had a sound mixer who made over 200 films, worked for the NFB for years and years and years. Jan Randall did the music, and Jan's been doing music for theater and film for about 40 years. So I had people who really knew the business to help me along the way and make it work. So it ended up being, even though it was shot on an absolute shoestring budget, I mean, it was dirt cheap because I didn't have any money. But it looks like a film that's a lot more expensive because I had a lot of really good people creating sound and image for this film and helping get it together.
Jerry Potter has been our guest today on Moving Radio. We are discussing the screening and the film In Search of Professor Precarious. You can check out him and the film, obviously, at the premiere screening in Edmonton on Friday, May 3rd at CoLab. That's at 9641 102nd A Avenue. Jerry, for anybody that can't make the screening itself, you said there were other opportunities to check it out. I'm sure you're hoping this isn't just the end of the road of it. If for anybody that might be listening to this and can't make the screening or is listening to this and it's already after the screening, how can they actually get connected with the film? And I'm not asking you about like when it's on Netflix, but more of like where they can start to find out, because you got a great website and some other social media for that people can check out too if they're interested.
if they go to the website, they can find a way to contact me, like my email's on there. And I have sent files to people who have bought it. I've got DVDs and Blu-rays. The libraries are starting to buy it a lot. I've sold about 10 to libraries across North America. So it's becoming available more and more as they contact me. And the show that is going on May 3rd, the screening, it looks like it's going to be sold out. So we're hoping to schedule a second screening. We've just been grappling with that since last night when we looked at the figures and went, wow, this thing is selling out. So we may try to set up a second screening. So watch your local media, et cetera, for that second screening if we do that.
We appreciate you coming and talking to us about the film. I would be one of those people that, many years ago, I think we're going on maybe like closing up on 30 years ago, that I was a student of yours, yeah. Right? So I can attest to that thing of where you are kind of in that situation, you have a bit of blinders on in that situation, and you don't understand necessarily what the people in those positions are dealing with. I think it's amazing that you brought this to light. And, I'm definitely one of those benefactors of the amazing wealth of knowledge that you have and the humanity you put on those courses and the connections that you make with students that, 30 years later, we're here talking. So yeah. I appreciate you and what you're doing.
Like almost all of the people in the film, I love teaching. And it's been my gift, the gift to me to be able to teach for so long. I mean, don't get the impression that we don't like teaching or we don't like students in any way. We do this because we love the subjects we're teaching and because we love teaching and we love our students.
Well, Jerry, thank you for talking to us today. And we encourage people to go out to CoLab. If you can't make it on the 3rd of May, then maybe there'll be another date that pops up as well, particularly if you happen to be like Jerry and you're in a situation like this, and this rings all too true for you, unfortunately. I think you definitely want to go check this out.
Thanks, Chris.